Well, good morning. You're with Margaret O'Connor on Community Matters, and I'm sitting here discussing the Olympics with our gardening guru, Ned. Good morning, Ned.
Good morning, Margaret. Great to be here.
We're just discussing the Olympics, and of course everybody knows, I think by now, that the little sister, Noemi Fox, just scored a gold medal. Almost unbelievable. What a golden ride she had. But if you get a chance to look at the replay, look at the replay from behind the start. She was working so hard to get ahead, just paddling like arms going like pistons to get out there in front and get to the first pole before everybody else did. So, look, I mean, it's a miracle in a way that these two girls have done so well. But anyway, we'll talk about some of that a bit later. But right now we've got Ned sitting here, very keen to talk about something so special for spring, upcoming spring.
Well, special for me and should be for most other people.
Yeah.
The grand world of poppies.
Well, it's an amazing world. We had a little preview on the weekend, I think, and just having a chat about all the different kinds of poppies there are.
Yep, yep. Mm. So you have your California poppies, you got your Flanders red poppies.
Yep.
You've got your opium poppies, you have your herbaceous poppies, and then you have the annuals of Iceland poppies.
So what are the herbaceous poppies?
Well, that's a poppy with the same leaf, but it's herbaceous means that it lasts longer. It goes for a couple of years.
Oh, okay, right.
The foliage stays instead of dying off and running away after 6 months.
Right, okay.
But I've got about five in my garden. I've had them in for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and the buggers have never flowered.
Oh.
This year they're going to do it, I hope.
Are they on a tall stem?
Well, I don't know yet.
Oh, you haven't seen them. They haven't emerged. Oh, fantastic.
Mm. So anyway, people always ask me in the nursery and in life, what's my favourite plant?
Yeah.
And probably one of my favourite and most used in my plant is the Californian poppy. And why is that? Well, it's what I call, it just never, ever shuts up flowering.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The great asset is that their longevity and freedom. And the flowers are like this effervescent froth of flowers.
Yeah, yeah.
They're, like all poppies, the petals are very delicate, silky textured, very transparently thin, and they come in a wide range of colours. So with the California poppies, you get hot yellows, pale yellows, rich red oranges, straight oranges, even whites and creams. So I just love them to bits. Now, they can grow in any soil.
Really?
Even the most impoverished soil they can grow.
Huh.
And even through to very clayey soils. You would think they wouldn't, but they do. In my experience, they'll grow absolutely everywhere. But they need some.
Right.
They need some for them, for the foliage to grow and for the flowers to open.
Right, okay. So no shade for Californian poppies. So they'd be a sort of prairie-type plant, would they originally, or?
Originally come from California.
Uh-huh.
And so thus they are classed as a pasture or prairie plant.
Right.
Now, I also adore them at night.
Oh, okay.
Excuse me. Because the petals will snap shut tight at dusk, and then it looks like this magic mini tulip bed. Absolutely wonderful.
All right.
So daytime and nighttime, they're absolutely fabulous.
Yeah. So with a bit of garden lighting at night, you get a completely different sort of display.
Exactly, yeah. But sometimes they're even better at night than during the day. Now, it's a crazy name, the botanical name,
mm-hmm.
Eschscholzia. Excuse me again. It's spelled Eschscholzia, or something like that. Anyway, it's completely and utterly unpronounceable, and that's why it's commonly known as
the Californian poppy.
Uh-huh. But why it has this absolutely crazy name, and I can never spell it after 30, 40 years, it was named after Johann Friedrich Eschscholtz.
Okay.
He was a zoologist.
Yeah.
And was a member of an expedition that sailed to the Pacific coast of North America way, way back in 1815. Hmm. As we said before, it's part of the poppy family, and as we mentioned before, native to California, semi-arid prairie and pasture lands, and it's actually the official flower emblem of California.
Uh-huh. In fact, so the Californians certainly own it. Yep.
Now, for me, the poppy, as I said, just never shuts up, but at the end of winter, coming to the end of winter, they just go bonkers. They proliferate absolutely everywhere, and you just can't stop them. Oh. Margaret's brought up a picture. Yep,
beautiful. Look, I'm sure most of our listeners know what they look like, but they're very different to what a lot of, well, I remember Iceland poppies, which we'll come to in a moment. Californian poppies have a sort of, well, how would you describe that? They're very colourful, but they have a sort of trump, almost like a trumpet sort of like shape.
Well, they've got only four petals. Yes. When they're open, they're slightly divided.
Yes.
So you can see the marked shapes of those flowers.
Yeah. And, yeah, they're really, really pretty and fluttery, aren't they?
Mm.
Whereas we'll go on to other poppies in a moment. So what about, is it too late to plant them now, or where are we up to with the?
Yep. You can buy them commercially in nurseries.
Right.
There are about three or four varieties that you can buy in small pots.
Right.
One's called Milky Way, which is a creamy ivory white.
Uh-huh.
One is Red Chief, my absolute favourite. It's this vivid, rich red orange. Still an orange, but it's just reddish orange.
Red Chief, yep.
The Purple Gleam, which really is more like a dusty pink.
Uh-huh.
And there's a yellow one, which to me is just a bit too brash and ugly. I don't know what it's called, but I say that word one. But if you find them in the pots, you've got to plant them very quickly because, or like all poppies, they have one single tap root.
Uh-huh.
And so if they're staying in a pot too long, they don't do very well.
No.
So you can't plant them in pots at home either. That single tap root just won't be able to work properly in a pot. So they're in the garden. You can also buy them in seed packets, which most nurseries will have, and you can get some with more frilly petals, differing colours. So, yep, it's a wonderful thing. So they can be planted any time of the year.
Oh.
Especially in the pots when they're available. But going to spring is probably your best time.
So if you get really excited about this, what you need to do, I can see a very well-known Australian seed company, seed packet, very inexpensive, shop now. You can buy them now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Either
online or go to your local nursery.
Yep. And now I've probably started off with about 20. I've probably got a couple of hundred now in my garden.
Right.
If they do revert back to the yellow, I just pull them out. You've got a single taproot, bang, out you go. And then every year I might buy another four or five of the red chief, the hot red-orange one, and some of the white ones. Now, because the bees absolutely adore them.
Oh, that's a good thing, yeah.
Absolutely adore them. But the bees, when they're buzzing around, they cross-pollinate between them.
Yeah.
So your new seeds, which scatter everywhere.
Yep.
Many times revert back to the yellow or the middle orange.
Right.
So each year I buy a few more pots of the white because actually they stay true. The buzzing bees don't change that colour.
It's interesting, isn't it?
And actually I've got some at home which are the purest virgin whites, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I do a few more of the red chiefs.
So you've got to find a nice sunny area. Soil doesn't matter so much. What about soil prep? Do you worry about that?
You don't have to. But like any plant, the more fertiliser you give, the more water, a little bit of mulch, the better they will be. Off they go.
Now, there are some plants that don't, especially the, annuals, that aquilegia, for example, that don't respond very well to mulch, but mulch is okay for the next season's seed.
Well, then depends. You can't do the mulch too thickly because these plants self-sow.
Yeah.
So that if you mulch, the seeds can't take off for the next season.
Right. But on your initial planting, I suppose a bit of mulch would be okay so long as you don't overdo it. Yeah. Make it too hard for the seedlings to pop out.
Generally in summer when they scatter most of their seeds, but they will scatter seed throughout the whole year.
Mm.
That's why you always have a bumper crop nearly every month.
Mm.
The only time they do seem to have a bit of a bit of a rest is when they're really throwing their seeds out in summer.
Uh-huh.
And so they may stop flowering for about 2 weeks in summer. And then in winter they may stop if it's a really heavy succession of frosts, or should I say succession of very heavy frosts. They may also go a little bit quiet.
Right.
But generally they flower all through my garden in winter, spring, summer and autumn.
Fantastic.
And they self-seed everywhere, so it's a very cost-economic flower to grow. Now, in design, they're quite wonderful because they have this frothy fern-like foliage with the stems coming up for the flowers, so they can cover or camouflage plants, other plants which you're having troubles with. For example, with your daffodils, tulip bulbs, all that sort of thing. After the bulbs have flowered, you have this foliage which will slowly wither and look pretty ugly, which you can't cut off.
No.
They're storing the food in the bowl for next year.
Yep.
But if you have the foliage of the poppies, they can camouflage them so you don't see them.
Lovely.
They're also great under roses to mask the stems and the lower branches which don't have much foliage.
Right.
And because they have a taproot, they're not going to interfere with the performance of the roses.
At all. And in fact, the taproot will condition your soil a little bit too.
Yeah.
If you had a crop and you decided you really wanted to do something else, just whip them out. And you've got a bit of soil conditioning going on with that taproot opening up any compaction.
So I absolutely adore them. The third one would be Flanders poppies.
Yeah, and I think there's a Flanders poppy stuck on the notice board behind you.
Excuse me. Yeah, well, it's a symbol of World War One with the red Flanders poppy and the tragedy of trench warfare.
So the story of that was the fields of Flanders, of course, were littered with the shocking bodies and the blood of so many of the Allied troops, I guess, or dead soldiers, and then they came up in this amazing sea of red poppies. That's where the...
Well, the trenches which were built were surrounded by red Flanders poppies.
Amazing.
So that's why they've become the emblem. And the emblem of... war in general.
Yeah. And the loss of life, I suppose it's that because they are a blood red, aren't they, with a black centre. So they're stunning. But whenever, of course, any kind of Remembrance Day, Anzac Day, and any kind of remembrance down at a war memorial or any kind of monument, you'll see these little Flanders poppies, imitation ones, of course. Pinned to the war memorial in various different ways to represent lives lost, I suppose. But they are easy to grow.
The easiest plant you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got the seeds, you just throw the seeds out in, I'm saying, late winter. You still probably give it a bit of a go now. They are available in punnets and retail nurseries, but avoid them if you can because, again, that single tap root and that little root ball in a punnet doesn't really go together, but they'll survive.
Right.
So, but they're probably the most prolific of all poppies in self-seeding. So each year I will, when the seed pods have dried and you've got the seeds in them, I would cut half of them and put in jars, glass jars, and seal them to keep them fresh. And the other half I would just let drop on the soil to keep them going.
Right.
And the ones in jars, I will end up just getting the seeds from them, put them in envelopes and then give them away as presents to friends.
Oh, beautiful.
People love them, you know.
Yeah.
Because if you give them like a thumbnail or a thumb size, that's probably a couple of thousand seeds.
Wow. Yeah, so they're tiny.
They're minuscule.
Yeah.
So I absolutely love them to bits.
And look, where in the garden would you put them under your roses or were any just anywhere? Or
they'll grow also to about a metre. One of the if there is a drawback because they're so dense in the amount of plants there are.
Strike, yeah.
Near impossible to weed throughout.
Right.
So you've got to sacrifice that little bit of an area of a soil saying, okay, weeds can grow.
Yep.
But you won't see the weeds.
No.
Because of the foliage and the height of the poppies. I remember about a year ago, a lady came into the nursery and said, look, I want this plant. I want to know how to do it. I've got some photos on my phone. So I looked at them and I said, oh, okay, very good. And then I politely asked where was this? And she gave the address and I immediately knew it was my garden. And I was chuffed as chuffed.
So, oh, Cam, yeah.
So I dropped some seeds off to her the next morning and she was just so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in spring, for me, they're the emblem of the warmth coming, returning. Yeah. It's happy, 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 happy.
So these are the Flanders poppies.
And
so they'll come out round about, September?
Yeah, mid-September. Depends on how late the frost will be, etc. The frost don't harm them. It just slightly retards the further growth.
Okay, righto. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Love them to bits.
Gorgeous. Now, my favourite, coming up, the fourth poppy.
Iceland. I love them too. I always plant about 30 or 40 plants in one area, so there's many little C. The buggers don't self-sow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they've never done it for me.
No, you've really got to deliberately. They're annuals, so you've got to correct.
Yep, they're annuals. So you can buy them in punnets. So you can buy them in mega trays. So you get 30 per tray. So I buy about 3-4 of those and just plant them out. And you put them in a place where you're going to get great winter sun.
Right.
But you've got to keep out of wind. They've got quite a fragile stem. The width of the flower's quite not as large as the opium poppy, but bigger than a Flanders poppy. And they're single petals. And they come in whites, creams, yellows, oranges, pinks, nearly the whole rainbow. Haven't got a blue one. There is supposed to be an Iceland, what do they call it? An Iceland, a papaver's lost to me, Himalayan poppy, which is blue.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
But I've never seen one successfully grown in Australia.
That's a challenge for the listeners.
Yeah.
Well, I love Iceland poppies because my parents grew them when I was little and I remember being about as tall as or not that much taller than the Iceland poppies and just having this very delightful early memories of these beautiful things with the sun, the light coming through the petals and the very hairy stems and they're so delicate. Yeah.
Well, this is great with any poppy because the petals are transparently thin that they change during the day according to the lights, you know, the morning or the afternoon. That's what makes it one of the most delicious and great flowers to grow in a garden. Talking about delicious, they're great in a potager, as in a vegetable garden.
Really?
Because they'll bring all the bees in to help cross-pollinate your other
plants. Oh, right. So if you were looking for a bee-friendly or a bee-attracting poppy, is there one that you would choose over others?
No. They love the Iceland because it's so wide and open. Also the opium poppy. They're the two which really attracts them.
I guess that's something it would be useful to say. I mean, I think it's becoming more and more important for gardeners to appreciate the garden from the point of view of a bee and bees to look after our bees. And one of the things when you're planning your summer display is to think, well, planting, this might be the subject for another show but making sure that you're providing good food for bees and also physical access, because I know that for some roses, everybody adores roses and we do too here and we've talked about them, but some of those very tightly curled roses are pretty hard for bees to actually get into, aren't they?
They can be, but they're busy work. They have a busy workload, bees. They can, if they really want to get into the centre of the flower and get the nectar or the food, they certainly will.
Yeah. But if you want to make it easy for them and give them a pleasant morning's work, poppies are a good one, aren't they? Because they're open, they're visible,
definitely an easier path. Yeah, that's why a potager is so important. Which I think we've hinted before on being an ornamental produce garden. So a lot of the ornamental parts are the flowers, which attracts the bees, and the bees will help everything else cross pollinate.
That's right. That's right. We might talk about how to get a potager for the spring and summer.
Yeah, well, I'm about to post on my website chapter 1 to chapter 5 of creating a potager in my own garden.
Well, for listeners who are interested, that website, Ned, is?
Pretty easy, nedmcdowell.com.
Ned McDowell.
McDowell.
.com.
And you'll find at the moment about 20, 24 blogs, published blogs. So if you go in there and you hover over a particular photo, then the photo will bring up the subject in writing or what it's about.
Mm.
So, for example, if you went the one that I did last night, published last night, Opium Poppies, you'll see there the title of it, you know, that'll never make you sleep because you want to get up too much, Opium Poppies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did a great one last week on true love. What was it? Art and true love of my Santalina hedge, which is quite beautiful. It's all about life, because all my subjects for my blogs about life and gardening, or gardening in my life.
Yeah.
So this one was about death, about life.
Yeah.
We're not just talking about plants.
No, deep ideas that.
About true art, about disappointment, about exhilaration, all these things that go into
woven into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can also go to my Facebook page.
Yeah.
Which is Ned McDowell Gardens, and then press follow, and then you can get a link. The link under the photo will take you immediately to the website. And it's all free. It's all free, all my information that I've gleaned and learnt.
And it's all just
over the last 40 years.
And it's all for fun.
Yeah.
So we're not, there's nothing commercial about this. We're just doing, spreading the joy of gardening and the joy of the delights of what gardens mean to people and how they can enhance, not just visually, but, you know, enrich the soul, I guess.
A lot of people don't like reading things on Facebook. Or a link. They just like the quick photo. Oh, I love the photo. Thank you very much. But they don't go into seeing, because it'll take me a week to write a good blog.
Yeah.
Okay, I edit it over and over and over and over.
Yeah, and I think people don't realise, well, I know because I know you from behind, but from before, but, you know, just the depth of experience you've got, Ned, and in gardening, and not just your own garden, which you often talk about, but other people's gardens as well.
Mm.
Yeah, fabulous. Now,
not soon I'll be making some films for the New England Garden Festival.
Well, I was going to ask you, just before I throw you out, Ned, is how is the preparation for this year's New England Garden Festival going?
Oh, it's forging ahead. It's much bigger this year.
Wow.
Much, much bigger. Many more gardens open. Mm. I think most listeners would know that it encompasses the area of, and it begins in Tenterfield, Glen, Gyra, Armidale, Yarralla, Walker. I think I've got all the places. So I think it goes over a week's period.
Mm. And it's going to be multiple open gardens.
Yep. And there will be the actual day at the racecourse will be even bigger.
Right.
So I'm doing little films for each of the gardens, or most of them, to promote the New England Garden Festival, because it's as well as a great day out for people.
Mm.
Last year we raised over $24,500. For Can Assist. That's a monumental amount for the first year.
And Can Assist does amazing work, helping people who've gone through the rigors of what a cancer diagnosis and treatment. It's just so devastating. And Can Assist come in.
Hmm.
They're different to the Cancer Council. They're local people helping local people.
Hmm.
Just deal with the financial and emotional implications of what a cancer diagnosis can do to your life.
Mm. Yeah, well, all the money for Can Assist stays local, which is fantastic. So a great day out, and then you help a great charity and help a lot of people through difficult times in their life.
It's wonderful.
It's a wonderful combination.
Well, I can't wait to hear more. Sorry, Ned.
And they're always after volunteers.
Mm.
So I think if you go online or onto Facebook, there will be New England Garden Festival site.
Yeah.
And you can always try to register as a volunteer, because it's a not-for-profit organisation and it's all run by volunteers. Absolutely. No one receives a wage.
And the other thing is, if you've got children or grandchildren or little ones in your life anywhere, the New England Garden Festival makes a big effort to introduce children to little
It's not my phone, thank goodness.
No. guilty as charged. I beg everybody's pardon. There's wonderful competitions for children.
Yep.
That will be coming up soon. So you just get used to having a look at that website and see what's coming up, because I know bigger and better things are planned. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret.
Coming in, and we're expecting lots of poppies to pop up in New England in the next, 3 or 4 months, I suppose. And
I have forgotten that with the opium poppies, and if I have excess seed, I actually do guerrilla gardening.
Oh.
Which means you go somewhere, like on the other, I'm on a double road, highway, Newfoundland Road, and I actually throw them on the far side.
Actually, we should have a whole section on guerrilla gardening, because
it would be wonderful. Yeah,
yeah. I think. Yeah. Well, you never know. I think we might do that. But for now, thank you so much for coming in, Ned. And
next week we may talk about the potager.
Potager. Yeah. How to design a potager.
It's going to get warmish soonish.
That's right.
And so it's a wonderful thing, because you get fresh produce like garden to plate. Hmm. But also visually it becomes absolutely stunning.
So for anybody who doesn't know, potager is a French word, and it means?
Ornamental productive garden.
So you're talking veggie plots, but something that is glorious to look at.
So basically everything you should have in your potager is edible, or for some is for use somehow in household life.
And I just want to mention we've also been celebrating in the past the glories of peonies. But peonies are poisonous, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so we need need to be careful when you're doing your potager that you cleared all of your plants as being edible and their leaves and things. So just keep an eye on your packaging whenever you go to the nursery. But anyway,
we could also do a whole show on the death plants.
Yes,
and the things which will poison you.
Well, we could, but we won't be doing that today.
I mean, a daffodil, if you eat a daffodil, you're dead.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, and so you should never have cut daffodil flowers in your house, because it creates headaches for people. Mm.
So interesting. Well, I think we should talk about that before all the flowers start popping out, so that people kind of are aware of the different implications of
plants. It's strange that dogs don't dig them up and eat them as well. Mm. So. Yeah. People are so worried about, is this plant okay with my dog or my cat? And then say, well, a daffodil, you know, you're going to have trouble with that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, hellebores.
Yes.
They used to be used for rat killers.
Mm.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you so much, Ned.
Great to be here.
Wonderful to have you, Ned.